we're in verse 12. And he says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given the sons of man by which they may be exercised. You know, Solomon seeks to see everything through the world through the spectrum of wisdom. You know, when we talk about that, he wants to understand everything, doesn't he? He wants to come to an understanding how everything works. He wants all these answers or questions answered for him. The problem is the world refuses to give him those answers. And that's because the world refuses to make sense, doesn't it? I mean, we live in a broken, fallen world. We live in a simple world. And, you know, if we lived in a perfect world where everything made sense, you know, Solomon would be much more happier. But he's trying to find all these answers. And he says, look, it's a burdensome task in which God has afflicted man with. It's almost as if to imply that God has created a system which arouses questions but offers no answers. And in reality, it is. I mean, you can look in nature and you can see there's a creator and you can see a lot of things, but does it really give you a lot of answers? It doesn't. And there's a lot of problems in the world. And you say, you know, if you're looking at the world from strictly a horizontal point of view, without any respect to God, it looks like we live in a world of complete chaos. You know, and a lot of people who refuse to believe in God today will ask the same questions. Why all the suffering? Why all the things that happen in the world? You know, if there's a God, and if there's a loving God, why does he allow this? Why does he allow that? Right? I mean, you see those same questions asked by people. And even as the people of God, do we not ponder those things sometimes? And the thing is, the reality is, we may never know the answers to those things, at least while we're living on this side of eternity. God doesn't necessarily give us the answers. But we know we serve a sovereign God who's in control of everything, but he doesn't always let us know what his providence is and how things work out. When Solomon is seeking to understand all these things, he's going to become more and more frustrated. Where's the clicker at? Nothing is working in here today. Anyways, Solomon's biggest problem is he falls away from God. And separated from God, he's going to try to find satisfaction in other areas. He's going to try to find it in wisdom, seeking for wisdom. And ultimately, he would say in chapter 2 that he would come up, it would result, or in chapter 1, much grief and much sorrow. He's going to look for it in pleasure. He's going to look for it in work and accomplishments. He would say it was all vain. He's going to look for it in all his possessions, and he would end up saying that, look, there was no profit to any of these things whatsoever. Over in chapter 2, if you look at what he says here, is in verse 10 and 11. And the reason I'm going through this is before we get into chapter 3, I really want you to have a good understanding of the point or the idea or train of thought that's leading up to chapter 3. I think many people, and I don't know exactly, I can't remember how the book looks at it, but many commentaries look at chapter 3 as a new train of thought, and it goes off. I don't see it that way. I think the thought is continuing from chapter 2 into chapter 3, at least midway through chapter 3, and then really on. You know, Solomon has really a narrative that he's pushing. He pushes this throughout the books. Unlike the Proverbs where, you know, there's piecemeal statements here and there, Ecclesiastes has actually a message, and it flows throughout the book. You just kind of got to understand how to divide it up. That's the problem with Solomon. He's really difficult to read sometimes. You're trying to understand some of the statements he's made. But in chapter 2, he says, in verse 10, he says, is there anything with, or I don't know, we're in chapter 1. Chapter 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart rejoiced in my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Then he goes on and says in verse 11, then I looked at all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, all indeed was all vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. So look what he says. He says, I rejoiced in my labor. It was my reward. Anything bad with that? No. Isn't that what God wants you to do? He wants you to enjoy life. There's nothing wrong with working and buying things and having possessions and enjoying this life. Certainly there's nothing wrong with that. But then he would go and say, but then I looked at all of it, and there was no profit to it. How is that? You know, you think of the, what's the point he's really trying to make? He wasn't satisfied, but at one point he was. It wasn't lasting. And that's really the ideal there is, you know, there was no continual satisfaction. Look, in a perfect world, we could gain satisfaction from all the physical things, could we? These physical things would be enough to give us continual joy. But unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect world. We live in a world full of sorrow and heartache, full of one moment after the next. And when he says there was no profit in these things, the point that he's really making is, and you look at what profit is. Profit is what is gain. What is the advantage when all expenses are taken care of? Well, the problem is life is full of expenses. For example, you go out and you buy a new car. Who likes buying a new car? I just bought a new truck. The thing is, you're watching it. It's a work truck, and it's got to be used as a work truck. But I don't want to use it for work because I'm afraid I'm going to get it dirty. But anybody knows what having a new vehicle is like. You enjoy it, right? You're proud of it. But what happens if you buy a vehicle, and you're really enjoying that vehicle, and 3 days later you're diagnosed with a terminal illness? How much joy is that car going to give you then? Nothing. There's no profit in it, is it? That car can't provide anything that is lasting because as soon as the next sad moment comes along, it wipes away any gain that you might have from those physical experiences. And unfortunately, those are the realities of the world that we live in. You go from one moment to the next. One moment's good, the next moment's bad. And that's the point he's trying to make here is, you know, there's no profit in these things. Because of the way the world is. And that's really going to be the narrative that he continues to push. Over in verse 13 of, let's see, where's that at? Chapter 2, verse 13 and 14. He looks at wisdom. And he says in verse 13, "Then I saw wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I perceived that the same events happen to them all." Wisdom is a good thing to attain, right? Certainly, he says, it is better than foolishness as much as light is better than dark. It excels. Certainly wisdom is a good thing. But he's distressed because he finds out, he sees that the world does not reward you for being wise. How is that? You think it would, right? Because you think if you make all the right decisions in life, then good things should happen to you. But you could be a good wise man, walking cautiously in life and making all the right decisions. You can be at a stoplight downtown, at a crosswalk. You push the light. You're doing all the right things. You walk out, and you get plowed over by a bus. While the fool who's drunk and is jaywalking down the road, guess what? He gets over just fine. He says, like, you know, here's these little equalizers in life. Death, time, and chance. They happen to everybody. And being wise doesn't protect you from those things. This world will not reward you necessarily for being wise. Now, God will. But when you're looking at strictly from a physical, horizontal point of view, this world doesn't give you anything. And as a matter of fact, he would even say, nobody even remembers the wise man. You know, the wise man can do a lot of great things, but when he's dead, nobody remembers him any more than the fool, do they? And those are the things that he's distressing. He's showing that in this broken world, you do not get rewarded for the things that you think you should. There's a lot of inequities in this world. There's a lot of things that are out of balance. And these are the things he's trying to figure out. Going over into verse 15 of chapter 2. He says, "So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens..." And I actually just read that, so we're going to skip that and go on to the next verse. I was jumping my head myself. Chapter 22, or verse 22 of chapter 2. It would have been easier to have this on a PowerPoint. Y'all, we just flew through this, so this is going to take us even longer. "For what is man for all his labors, for the striving of the heart in which he is toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful, and his work burdensome. Even in the night his heart takes no rest. This is also vanity." He's making a statement. He's starting to draw a conclusion to everything he's been talking about. Here a man is trying to draw satisfaction, lasting satisfaction, from all these physical things. But unfortunately, man overall lives a sorrowful life. It's full of sorrow, especially the man who's trying to gain happiness from these things. He's like a man scrounging for one morsel of satisfaction, one morsel of joy in all these physical things, only to find it constantly eluding him. And that's what Solomon's saying. "I tried this, I was bored. I tried this, there was no satisfaction. I tried this, I wanted answers, I couldn't get them." And all he ended up getting was more questions. You know, he sees all these events taking place the same way that we do. You turn on the news. You know, Solomon didn't have the news, but we can turn on the news, and we're flooded with all this information that comes to us that distresses us, right? You know, whether it's abortion or it's all these other things, we find out, we see all this wickedness and all this evil and injustice going on in the world, and what can you do about it? Nothing. Now, you have the wisdom. You know the answers, right? You know, if it was up to a few wise men who righteous wise men, they might be able to sit down and figure out all the problems in the world, but guess what? It's not up to me. And as Solomon's come to figure out, I look at all this stuff, and I can't even do anything. I'm wise, but I can't do anything to solve all these problems. And then there's these things that kept eluding him. As in, if there's no profit in all these physical things, then what's the point of it? What's the meaning of life? Why does God give them to you? Why does God say, enjoy these things? He's like, well, I tried that, God, but then I couldn't enjoy them. It wasn't there. The reason he'll come to is because he was trying it the wrong way. Solomon was looking, he was hinging his happiness upon these things. God never told you to do that. He would say, enjoy these things, but don't think that these things are going to be able to give you lasting joy. It's in verse 24 of chapter 2. He comes to his first really moment of realization. Some people would call it an epiphany, I guess, if you want to call it that. But he looks at verse 24. He says, nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw from the hand of God. For who can enjoy or eat, or who can enjoy more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner, he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This is also vanity and grasping for the wind. You know, Solomon is looking back, right? He's writing, looking back over the course of his life. He's writing his journal. And he's given us his train of thought, the way he was looking at the world. But I believe at the time he's writing, and he's probably repentant and come to his senses. He's remembering now where true joy and all that really comes from. And so he's injecting these vertical viewpoints, if you would, into this to try to show his reader, I've tried all this and this wasn't working. But now I know where true joy comes from. He says there in verse 24, enjoy. You know, God gives you these things to enjoy. Nothing is better than a man should eat and drink. That soul should enjoy good for his labor. That's a good thing. It's a good thing to enjoy the physical blessings. There's nothing wrong with that. God has given us this earth to enjoy. And there's nothing wrong with it. You don't have to feel guilty about that. But ultimately, he would say, but we're, God is the one who gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy. Now, you got two individuals who are very well blessed. They all have the physical things of life. They don't want for anything. Yet one finds true joy in his life with his physical things, and the other one does not. What is the difference? Well, God. He wants more. What? He's lacking. Okay, there, what God has given him. He's lacking contentment, isn't he? I mean, what was he going to say? Did you going to say something? Oh, you had your hand. No, go ahead. Talk. Yeah. Yeah, it comes down to perspective. Just as Danny was saying, you know, the guy who really appreciates where these blessings are coming from, that God has given these blessings, he's going to be content. He has a divine. What we're talking about is the difference between a vertical mindset and a horizontal mindset. Under the sun mindset is someone who just sees everything in front of them. They don't ever look above. This is the life that's kind of going on under this world. There's no divine perspective. The difference is, and the reason a guy wants more, and I think it hits it right on the head, because he hinges his happiness on these physical things. And that's why he needs more, because he needs more satisfaction, where the guy who is content and grateful for the things that God has given him, you know, is just satisfied with what God can. Of course, he can work and he can enjoy more and he can do all these things. God gives him the right to do that. But if these things are taken away from him, the question is his joy then removed from him? Well, that's the thing that Solomon says. It's God who gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy. God, Solomon was looking for wisdom, knowledge, and joy in the world. And he found it kept eluding him. It was not real. But he understands if you want true wisdom, if you want knowledge, the knowledge that counts, the knowledge he would get in the world, he would find distressing. But the knowledge that is really rewarding and true joy only can come from God. And that's where I wish I had this PowerPoint, because then I could show you my slides here. If you look at the word joy, and You know, we know that God gives us joy. It's one of the fruit of the Spirit, right? Question is how does He give you joy? Good question. I mean, if it's one of the fruit of the Spirit, joy and peace are the fruit of the Spirit, how do we get it? I mean, you could say, well, I just read the Word. Well, I know a lot of people who read the Word, but they don't have joy in their life. I see it.
It depends on what you do with the Word. If you read it and study it and try to live it, you'll have peace and have joy. You're doing what God wants you to do.
Yeah, and that he says that, don't he, Howard? I mean, right there, was it in 24, verse 25? He says that, I'm out of sorts here. Verse 26, for God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy to a man who is good in sight, but to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good. Going back up to, where is it at? Oh, I can't remember. I'm out of whack here with my scriptures and anything. That's the point he was making. Those who are good in the sight of God. Those are the ones who God is truly, yeah, that's where it says. God gives joy to those who are good, those who live for Him, who are good in His sight. That's who He's going to get. Joy, I mean, we know what joy, we could define it, happiness, gladness, joy, whatever. It comes from the Greek word chara, C-H-A-R-A. It's a very similar word to the word grace, which is charis. Very interesting. If you look at the definition of charis, a lot of times it's kindness, loving kindness, favor. It's interesting that Thayer's lexicon defines it as that which affords joy or delight. Thayer's is kind of looking at it as more what joy does, not necessarily as what it, trying to define what it is, but what does it do? Look, if you're in great need, if you are homeless, you're with your kids and you're out on the street, and somebody walks up and just gives you the keys to a house, they're giving you a great gift, aren't they? How are you going to feel? Overwhelmed with joy. You would think. Well, okay, we understand that because that's what you see when people are baptized into Christ. They're saved by the grace of God. They're overwhelmed with joy. But then it doesn't take very long for that joy to start to dissipate in some people. Why is that? Imagine, I'm sorry. Well, I mean, what more can you have? All your sins are washed away and you're right in the sight of God. Need a challenge. I need a challenge every day. My patients are challenged here. I could give you some stories, but right now it's not a good time. I've had some good ones today. Go ahead, Justin. You know, and I think ultimately, one of the things that Solomon is trying to really encourage in his reader is faith. He's trying to create faith in his readers. He wants them to ultimately, you're going to have to trust in God in a lot of things, because when you're looking at this world from a physical point of view and the circumstances that are going on, it's complete chaos and it doesn't make sense. Things only make sense when you look at it from an eternal framework. It's the only way I can make sense of the things that I see in the world, because this world sometimes is so heinous. And it's the very reason that people even question the existence of God, because of the brokenness that this world, you know, that this world is in, the shape is in. How does a loving God allow those things? And I think Christians sometimes do the same thing. You know, is God's grace only effective at the time of salvation, when you're saved in baptism? How long does God's grace continue? Well, throughout your life. Every day He blesses you with something, that's the grace of God. Every day when you ask forgiveness for your sins, that's the grace of God. You think over time, people start to become ungrateful to the grace of God? They start to lack appreciation for what God does for them. I told one time, and I can't remember what it was, Kim and I were talking this, what if you woke up every morning only with the things you gave thanks for the day before? What would you have? It might be sometimes I'd wake up naked. Nothing. Might not even have air to breathe. You know, there's things, seriously, I mean, the thing is we lose sight of where all these blessings come from. We lose sight. If grace is what promotes joy, it would be like somebody giving you that house and then you turn around complaining because you don't like the color of the carpet and the color on the walls. All right? Somebody's just taking you off the street and gave you a home to live in. Oh, I don't like carpet. I don't like what. You know, that's why, you know, so you wonder how Christians sometimes can be some of the most miserable people on the face of the earth. It's because here they've experienced this grace, and now all of a sudden this grace doesn't mean anything. And they walk around like, what do you have to be sad about? Everybody goes through life in hardships. And half time we don't feel good. I get all that. That's the way the world is. But true joy is continual. It comes from God. It can't be based upon what I do. It's got to be upon, as we've already stated, an eternal divine perspective, a vertical perspective. It's looking up constantly. Go ahead, Danny. In the grace that God had showed him. Even when Paul was in pain, he was miserable when he had this thorn in the flesh, and he goes to Jesus and he prays three times, and he says, and what is Jesus' response to him? My grace is sufficient. Remember what I've done for you. You're lucky just to be where you're at. And he would be. He would be content, and he'd be thankful for that. Good point. Yeah, because God could say, well, let me take my soil and my seed and the air that you need to cultivate and the water. Let me take all that back and then let's see what you can do with that. Yeah, it's short-sightedness, isn't it? That's a really horizontal. Anybody have any comments as we move on? We're going to go ahead and move into chapter 3. Remember what Solomon has been talking about. You know, it's one thing to enjoy the fruit of your labor, to enjoy these physical things that are going on. But unfortunately, life is a series of moments, literally. Moments, by definition, are temporary, aren't they? You go from one moment to the next. One moment is a moment of love, and the next moment might be a moment of hate. It's just the way it is. And the thing is one moment you're happy because everything's going perfect. The next moment, everything is upside down. That's the way the world is. And so Solomon, as he starts to describe chapter 3, he's going to look at the totality of man's experiences under the sun. Some people would say this is kind of a poetic mirrorism, which is just contrasting statements or words to basically, you know, define the entirety. And that's really what he's doing. Not everything is listed in here as far as man's experiences, but these things describe the entirety of a man's life as he lives on this earth. You know, your task under the sun. And just look at what he says. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. That's, you know, there's songs been wrote about these passages. But there is a purpose behind everything. Is it always easy to see that purpose? No. As a matter of fact, do you think there's a lot of times where it's impossible for you to see that purpose? Yes. Why? Because God doesn't reveal it. That's where faith is going to have to come into play. You know, it requires faith a little bit. But God knows there's a purpose for these things. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant, a time to pluck what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down, a time to build up. A time to weep, a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear, a time to sow. A time to keep silent, a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war or a time of peace. You know, every one of us, from one form or another, will go through these things throughout our life in some form or another. I mean, like I said, there's going to be moments where you love, right? There's going to be moments where you hate. There's going to be moments where you experience love. There's going to be moments where you experience hate. You know, this really describes the cycle, the nature of cycles in a man's life. You know, you notice that there are good times, what? And there are what? There are bad times. It's constant. You will enjoy both. And the thing is, and it's kind of just asking a question, if your happiness depended, and that's just really going by this, but I think this would be overstating it. If you depended on physical things to give you joy, you'd be lucky to be happy 50% of the time. But I think that's overstating it, to be honest with you, because I think we experience sometimes more negative, especially as we get older. Those of you who don't feel well, do you feel worse or better right now all the time? You know how you feel. So if your joy was tied up in your physical things, you'd be miserable all the time. And that's kind of another message to go on. But as he goes on to chapter 9, and this is where the main question he's going to be making, what profit has the worker from that in which he labors? That's really the main question that he asked. Remember back in chapter 2, he asked that same question. After Solomon had done all these things in his life, He says, I enjoy the fruit of my labor, but what profit was there? There was none. So if I'm looking at my physical life and I'm trying to draw joy or peace from these, my life, just from the physical perspective, let's take just take God completely out of it, the regular tasks that we go through, what's the gain? What's the profit? Solomon's saying there is none. There's no gain, you know, because of the way life is. And that's the thing that he finds distressing. So the question, I think, and this is just my opinion, he comes up and he's going to ask, all right, if all these physical things, nothing can satisfy, then what's the point of all of it? What's the point of life? Why, God? Why do you give us this stuff? It's almost like he's turned to God and he's going to blame God. So why do you do this to us? Why do you put this burden upon us? You know these things can't please us. You know that there's things that are going to arouse our curiosity and you don't give us the answers. Why do you frustrate us? Solomon was lacking faith. And that's the realization that he's going to finally come to. Who is in control? Solomon's like, God's in control. I know who's in control. He'll go on to say, I've seen the God-given task of which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to end. What does that mean? He makes everything beautiful in its time. Is hate a beautiful thing? Is war a beautiful thing? Some of you versions, anybody have, does the New American Standard say something different? I think it does. Appropriate. Yeah, it's probably the ideal. He makes everything appropriate. In other words, does God create war and sin and all these other things? God didn't create the broken world, but does he use those? Is there a purpose behind these things? The question is, and we already asked this, can you always see what the purpose is? You can't really always see those things. That's the thing about the providence and the sovereignty of God. When you're trying to look at life and you're trying to figure out, why are these things happening to me? Why are these things happening to me? A man who is strictly physically driven, what's his outlook on that going to be? Well, what's his state going to be? If you're strictly driven from a horizontal or from a physical perspective, how are you going to view all these things that go on life? You're going to be happy all the time? You're going to be miserable? Yeah, even, like you said, the way you act, even your conduct is going to be based upon those things. But a person who understands that even in this turmoil, even in this hardship, there is a God, there's a sovereign God who's at work in everything. I may not know exactly how he's at work. I may not know how it's going on. But I know for a fact that he's there. And I know for a fact I'm not alone in this. And I know for a fact that he works in my life and he's there and I trust in him. And that's ultimately what it's coming down to. Do you trust your Creator? Are you going to put your faith in your Creator? Because that will control the way you live. But if this is just a bunch of, we're just going through this and there is no Creator, there is no God, then what's the point of all of it? Where's the meaning behind it? Because the person who doesn't live life with God in view, that's exactly the way they're seeing things. You know, the verse that I have put in here, and I don't even know where it's at because I'm really kind of messed up with my PowerPoint right now. I think you brought this up in your sermon. It's interesting. Romans 8, when it says that all things work to good for those who love the Lord, even though you don't know how God is working, but you know he's actually working. Now, the thing is do all things work for, let's say, for those who love God? Let's look at what that means. For those who love the Lord, those who are called according to his purpose. And I think it's interesting. You got to throw that part at the end of it. Does everything going to work out in your life problem-free just because you love God? I mean, because, look, there are people who have died for their faith, and they would say, well, what good was that? Where was the good in that? So, no, I mean, you think that everything should work good, and in a perfect world, yeah, everything should work good. But I love God, and yet I'm suffering injustice and all these things and all these inequities. I'm suffering in these in my life. Why is this not working out for my good? Well, I think we misunderstand good. I think the idea there is we're called according to His purpose. What is God's purpose for you? What's His purpose for you, ultimately? To get you to heaven where He's at. Yeah, that's ultimate. He wants you where... Now, we may look at things and say, how in the world is that going to work out? But He knows exactly how that's going to work out. He's ultimately in control. Well, He's completely in control. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we have to live right before Him. I mean, that's what is going to control everything. Solomon even knows that. I mean, this is what it's going to come down to, how you live before God and how you do good. I'm going to try to get caught back up with my PowerPoint here because you can't really even see it. Looking in verse 10, 11. Look, he draws a conclusion in this. I have seen the God given task which sons of men are occupied. He has made everything beautiful in His time. He has put eternity in their hearts, except no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. What does that mean, He has put eternity in your hearts? I hear this a lot, and people talk about it a lot, but it's kind of a difficult thing to really sit down. How does He put eternity in your hearts? Because you really need, I think we kind of got to see how all this is tying together. That's the thing. He's making a bunch of statements here, and it is very difficult. I mean, chapter 3 is a pretty tough chapter to read and try to come to grasp with. But there is a point that He's trying to make. But how does He put eternity in our hearts? He created us in His own image, right? He didn't create you just to be animals. You're not an animal. You know, animals don't look to God. They don't think of God. They don't think of anything eternal. They're not thinking of a hereafter or some type of, they're not worship. They don't worship. They don't do any of that. We do that, right? Those are things to do. He puts that, man, in other words, you know, is it possible for man to really get satisfaction from just physical? No, because God didn't make you that way. He made you to want something more. He made you to look to more. He knows. But yet, that's what Solomon is then. Why did you give us to us? Because I want these things to point you to me. I want you to find the dissatisfaction in this, Solomon. You know, God could have took away Solomon's wisdom, but He didn't. He said, search it out, Solomon. Look for the question. Question everything. And at the end of the day, you're going to say, you know what? I don't know anything, God. I need to come back to You. So that's why he said, you know, Solomon's like, I found it to be grief and sorrow because I didn't get the answers I was looking for. None of these things. God did not create you to be satisfied with physical. He created you to look towards something more after this. That's why people are so miserable today. People give no thought to the... I mean, there's something there nagging at them. They know they're dissatisfied with this world, but they don't have enough humility to go look for it and to search for it. Solomon is like, God is like, look at the nature, look at everything. My fingerprints are all over it, but they're not going to give you the answers you need. You got to come to me for the knowledge. And that's what people refuse to do because the knowledge is not what they want to hear. With a lot of worries, a lot of sorrow, a lot of heartache, but he can look down at this common man who just has his wife and his kids surrounding him, and he's the happiest man on the face of the earth. And Solomon is like, now why shouldn't I be like that? You know, you can almost imagine him seeing that. I mean, he was in this great position. You would think if anybody was going to be happy from physical things, Solomon's like, who could have more than me? Who can enjoy it? He was the perfect person to tell us exactly what you're saying. This guy, I have all this stuff. Don't think that Solomon went off in the corner of the world somewhere and experimented with everything. Solomon was still ruling his kingdom and trying all these things. He had the busyness and the heartaches of life and being a ruler and trying to find him. That's why he couldn't find any happiness. You know, life, he still had to live life, and yet he's trying to find these satisfaction and all these things at the same time, and it never was balancing out. The whole thing was missing was the fact that he knew that eternity was in his heart, and it was drawing at him. It was constantly pulling at him, and you know, and he kept coming up empty, searching for all these other things. It's a shame it took him. But, you know, Solomon is no different from us. We do the exact same thing. We're drawn to things. We're drawn to desires. And we push God out of our mind, and we go after those things, only to find out the hard way what? God was right. Everything that God said was right. Come back to me, and you can get what you were looking for. And that's what God... So he lets us go through it. But ultimately, that's what he lets us. He lets us go through things. He lets us experience them to come back to him. Sorry, I'm kind of getting off of my point on here. Not that I kind of did that because my PowerPoint's not up here. I don't know what to do. It's something that I think as human beings we naturally long for. Let's just read the scripture. I can do away with the PowerPoint. And he says he's put it eternally in your heart, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Here's where he comes to these great realizations. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that man should eat and drink and enjoy the good from his labor. It is a gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Now, God has put eternity in his hearts. But where did he find out this knowledge? When he says, I know these things. He got that from God. He didn't get that from going out looking in the world. He knew that from having a relationship with God. He's remembering. Solomon is remembering what it was like when he was with God and when he was having that relationship. I know these things because he had experienced it. I know that what God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can take away from it. God does it and that man should fear before him. That which has already been, and what is to be has already been. And God requires an account of what is past. You know, God is in control of this world. And no amount of investigation, no amount of thing that Solomon was going to do was going to gain him something that God didn't want him to know. Solomon wasn't going to find his satisfaction looking at these physical things. He would have to come to realize that God is a sovereign God. Everything that goes on in life, his frustrations with these inequities, he would have to say, God, I know that God doesn't look out to do you harm, but he does allow these things to happen to us for a purpose. And that's what Solomon would come to realize. Why all these inequities? And that's what he's about to ready to get into the next statement about all the injustice. Why does all this happen? People ask that questions all the time. Well, you know, I really don't know. I can't really answer that. But I have to have enough trust in a sovereign God that if he allows it to happen, there's a purpose behind it. And that's really where I just need to be at. I don't need to have all the answers. Solomon wanted all the answers, and he would not get them, and he was frustrated. And he would finally have to say, God, whatever you do, I know you're doing the right thing, and I have to just put my faith in and trust in that. And that's where Solomon is going to finally, he lost his faith. He's going to have to come back to that and put trust in it. Because when you're just looking at this world from a physical point of view, it's really frustrating. And we as even the people of God see these things, and don't we ask the same questions? You know, we look in the Old Testament, how did God let them go and kill men, women, and children? How is that right? Do you ever ask that? Of course we do. But God knows why he did it. You know, and we have to trust that he's doing it. What was you going to say, Austin? And here's the thing he's going to hammer on. This leads us. God requires an account of what is past. Now, as he's about to go into the next statement, that kind of leads you into that when he talks about judgment. Do you always see the judgment of the wicked? No, sometimes they skate through life with no problems. And sometimes they may not even get judged until the day of judgment. But does that mean it's not going to happen? God requires that. He requires everything. It's ultimately man's responsibility to live right before him. And that's where man is going to find his true peace. But hopefully the PowerPoint will be working next week and I can do a better job. Sorry about all that.